Hero's Journey.
It kind of adds, playing that song, it really adds a different feel to what that scene must have been like. It's not Colorado, though. I think they're in the, maybe he's just interviewing a guy who's in Colorado.
He was telling a story about how they met, I think it was the first army that they had, the first battle that they had set up on their way back in. And that battle was amazing. And I did. I thought of, what is it, the 300, the 200, the 300. And the movie was very stylistic and the stacking of the bodies as they were.
Right. I was thinking of Game of Thrones and the Battle of the Bastards. Just, walls of corpses.
This is Life, Death, Sci-Fi, Episode 10, World War Z, a companion read for the time of COVID. My name's Eric.
I'm Chris.
And let's get into it.
It's what they were listening to when they in Colorado when they formed that Raj Singh Square. That was Iron Maiden, The Trooper. I'm just here fortifying myself in one metaphorical Raj Singh square.
I think that's what we need to do when we talk about this. It's an amazing story. I definitely want to talk about what gear you would bring to a world that is populated with zombies. Would you protect your wrists first or ankles? Your neck? What's essential?
The ankles. I'd definitely like to have a good pair of boots. And yes, I think something to protect my forearms. And
shin guards.
Maybe some kind of
helmet. Would football shin guards be good enough?
I think used to have these like Kevlar shin guards. I don't know if that's still
really,
but we used to buy the kind I used to always get as a teenager was Kevlar, and they were supposedly bulletproof. But yeah, it could have been just advertised.
good for this day and age as well. Dual purpose.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe those things were really bulletproof, although we never tested it.
About it.
Yeah, a good pair of leather boots would probably suffice. I think it'll give you enough time to react and swipe down with some kind of weapon.
You don't want to be too burdened. My first thought was, I'll just dress up in the shark suit, that chainmail stuff. But I don't think you can move then, can you?
Yeah, I definitely want to move. These zombies, these Zaks, they're not the zombies of the World War Z film. Those are too frightening. Right? I mean, just ridiculously fast.
Okay, we're talking about the film. I watched the film before I read the book. I don't know if that was a mistake or not, but I kept looking in this book for the film.
Right.
And not really.
No.
It is a story all on its own. And I guess that the film is a different story on its own as well. That's the movie story. It had to have a hero, huh?
Yeah, you need a Brad Pitt. I enjoyed the film. I thought it was really good. I think the only connection I can really make is, I mean, you see echoes of different places. They tried to think in which they could portray some glimpses, right, of different scenes in the book. Through this one character, he's going from place to place, try to find a cure. And I think in a sense, it wasn't a bad attempt. I think there's a lot of action, a lot of thrills. I read the book first and I love the book so much that I was hoping for more of the narratives and the stories in the book. And I didn't get some of those. I think we get the beginnings of it, but it's in Korea instead of China. We get the scene in Israel, which is really cool.
That was an awesome scene.
Yeah.
One of my favorites, but horrifically so. You're sitting there watching this going, oh my God.
Well, different than the book, because in the book, it's not overrun. They're successful.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah, that's what I was looking for in the book. And I was thinking, oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess I'd recommend both. I think they're both worth checking out. I'd still love to see this remade. I think it'd be so cool as like a Netflix production.
You can see that it's a mini series, and you can see the different chapters or parts of this story.
It's like you could be great. Almost a Twilight Zone approach or a Black Mirror or something, where there's this thread of this common, some things that link all the stories together, but we would actually get each of these oral histories, each narrative.
I think this is a good idea. Can't believe they haven't thought of it before, though.
You had a favorite narrative or one that's stuck with you?
Okay, of course. The canine chapter. What was the name of that chapter anyway? Was it in the Total War or?
I think that was the section it was in.
Blame, Turn the Tide, Warfare. Yeah, Warfare. But how they train dogs so reminds me of the stories I've seen about how soldiers right now are using animals to help them. And the bonds that they make are amazing. And what kind of people are out there to help them reconnect after the service is over. So I was reading that chapter going, wow, this is, in that setting, even more amazing. Yeah, so which
I like that one as well.
Any animal owner is going to like that one.
I was thinking, and this wasn't the one that resonated the most, but there was that chapter. And there will be spoilers here. If it's not obvious already. That chapter toward the end with I think the guy's name was like, I think maybe Korean American. I don't know if it got into that, but that was the character's name. I don't know why that stuck with me, but he had this surfer accent, and we get toward the end and he's talking about the whales. It was really the whales.
Oh.
And I remember thinking to myself, there's so many like heart-wrenching parts to this. I remember thinking as a human reading this, I was so focused on humans. And then we get this part about the dogs, and we get this loss of the whales. And there's a later part where this Native American woman, who's just briefly mentioned, like kisses a turtle and says something about her ancestry or people. And I realized I wasn't, it's selfish or self-absorbed to just be focused on the humans. Of course, none of this is real, but it feels so real.
I wonder especially the beginning of this story, the warnings. And I started this quite a few weeks ago when we first started talking about this, and the news kept churning up these things that, if we would have known, or he would have said, and it was too close. I had to put the book down for a little bit because it was just too real. A story that is too real and has zombies in it.
Right. I kind of felt terrible for suggesting it after. I think coming from the parable of the sower, it's brutal. Just a chapter that resonated with me. And I guess I can't remember the exact chapter title, trying to find it, but it was the one with the family that was arguing about whether they should pack up and go and head north, and they end up in Canada near, I think, some lake. They're all camped out and
there, so you're gonna have to keep handing me details.
They drive up there and they're all camped out and they're waiting for it to get cold because they've been told they'll be safer once it's cold.
And, I remember that part.
And they all start to slowly shed their things and trade their things, and they begin to get really hungry. And of course, some people at the camp start to cannibalize some other people. And they've got, the father's only got like this radio and doesn't want to trade it in. And he gets in a fight with the mother, and then he disappears for a while and then brings back this stew so he can feed the kids.
I don't remember that. I don't remember that part.
As a parent, and I guess as somebody who sees things differently than his spouse, I tend to get to really, I guess, consider or explore ideas of, maybe a possible apocalypse or the things devolving environmentally in a way in which you have to fend for yourself, and at what point would, not necessarily fend for yourself, but you have to make some tough choices. And would you, how do you go about that when people aren't seeing things the same way? And maybe you see Noah building an ark or some kind of idea like that, where everybody thinks you're crazy, but until it's too late. Of course, if you're wrong, then you are just crazy and paranoid.
Or you could start a YouTube channel and just join the rest of the preppers.
Yeah, exactly.
There's nothing wrong with the lessons we learned in the parable of the sower, is to know what kinds of plants are edible in a forest or a field for basic first aid. And then we talked about a go bag. Now our go bag is a little bigger because we've got to put all of this protective gear in there to keep the zombies away.
Yeah, that's one of those things too, where you're reading this and then just seeing some things in the world today, and you start to think that it's hard to know. You just realize how much you don't know. And so, with the parable of the sower, this family that it go, there's somebody else telling the story. It's not, can't remember who's telling that exact story actually. There's somebody up north that he's interviewing. And I think this is around that same, there's somebody who he's interviewing who's talking about the families coming north, and then we get a family coming north. And the one he's interviewing who is up north, I think originally watching the people come north, and we find that they just don't know what to do. Like, they bring a sleeping bag, but they get in there with all their clothes on, and their clothes are a little wet, or they put their shoes in the sleeping bag, and then they get like hypothermic because there's too much moisture in there. And the smart thing to do is take everything off when you get in. You wouldn't know that unless you'd spent time camping in cold climates.
True.
You can just imagine there's all kinds of things you wouldn't know if you really had to survive outside of all the comforts we're used to. The earth abides, this theme of like, how do you survive? Those guys just eat all the cans of food for decades. Realistically, you wouldn't be able to go that long. The supplies would run out probably. How do you survive?
Well, you would take, in your go bag, you'd have some seeds.
I think you wouldn't, that would be hard, right? You'd want to be pretty, you'd want to be on the move.
A lot of tension.
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to plant anything because you wouldn't be able to stay somewhere. Probably there were a few safe havens. I thought that was what was so masterful and cool about this. I've heard Max Brooks interviewed a few times. I was trying to find some interview. I thought it was on Terry Gross's
Fresh Air.
Fresh Air. Yeah, I swear it was on there and I couldn't find it when I was looking at my.
Okay. I will try. Well, please.
Yeah,
I'll
add it to the show. But it was so good. And he's so knowledgeable. And he was actually, Brooks was like, one of the things they were talking about, because it was about apocalyptic kind of things they were talking about.
Yeah.
And he was hired by the U.S., I don't know, Department of Defense, or was giving some lectures because of his.
No way.
Yeah, he's got like real knowledge about, I don't know, all these kind of scenarios and things. And I think that was what was so cool and masterful, is just the real, this seemed to have real insight about the ways in which different governments would possibly react, and how it might work in different countries, and then all these different situations where we get Paris underground, where we get this British guy interviewed about some castles in Europe, and I just thought that was so cool. Maybe the submarine. There's just
such
amazing, I think, knowledge about so many different.
Awesome. Well, it must have been so much fun thinking about how you're going to set this story up, and then where you're going to go with this. And if I may, just see how fast I can do it. This book jumped around the world more than any other story I've ever read. Starts in China, goes to Tibet, Amazon, West Indies, Tel Aviv, Taiwan, Montana, Tennessee, India, Russia, Kansas, Barbados, Greenland, Denver, South Africa, Ireland, Canada, India, New Mexico, Vermont, Washington, California, Montana, back to China, Washington, New Mexico, Japan, Ireland. And I missed a whole section there. Oh my gosh. There are literally 30 more places that this story took place. And that added to the drama, that added to the tension, because it wasn't just one place, one person was talking about this happened here and now it's over. It's going to disappear. It'll be a miracle. It'll just go away.
It feels overwhelming in that sense. And just given what happened, it's so similar, right, to COVID-19, where you've got, especially those early chapters where China, they're all escaping, even though they're sick and they know it. They're hoping for cures or leaving. And I remember there was some wealthy, I think younger person from China who like flew to Paris and then went back or something. And they think that's where a lot of the early cases in France came from. But you can see how people think it's not me, or I'm okay, or they'll be able to help me if I get away.
You have to run down the street yelling, run, they're coming.
I thought that organ.
Oh, yeah, of course, that would be true.
That was so gruesome. That would be my opening chapter if I were laying this out in a TV series or something. I might start with that just because it's so, I don't know, it grabs you. And then flash back to a little bit earlier. That was just gruesome. And I remember I went to see this, and I don't know if these were just rumors or not, but there was this exhibition that was traveling the world called the Bodies Exhibition. Did you ever see that?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Are you talking about the ones that got sliced thin?
Yeah, and exactly.
And then you could just see it?
In Seattle.
You saw that?
Yeah. And then I remember there were rumors that it was that they were using, I don't know if this is true, so it's just speculation.
Prisoners.
Chinese prisoners. And they did stop exhibiting it. So I don't know. And they were definitely people of East Asian descent. You could tell that in the exhibition. And I don't know. It just reminded, the idea of the organ donors or taking these organs from prisoners and using those for selling those to wealthy patients.
When I was reading that chapter, just at that moment, when I came across the part that said, at least he reanimated in my laboratory. If we sent him home to his wife, what would have happened?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and that's it. That was just a matter of a little bit of luck. Not for
a little bit of luck.
Yeah. But it didn't get out anyway. Yeah, that was gruesome. I think just as we're talking about these oral histories and kind of the show, a would-be Netflix special. When I read some of these things, I'm always thinking about if there was some kind of fan fiction, what would I write or what would I do? And I didn't remember, this is my second time I've read it. I didn't remember this from my first reading years ago. There was a bunch of colleges in California that got together and made this stand at the Women's College of, I can't remember what it was, Scops or something like that. There was like 300 students that were able to fight off 10,000 zombies. How they went about that, were able to survive for
years.
Oh. That would be a cool series or a cool film.
So that would be your fan fiction.
I think it'd be a good one. I also want to know more about the, I don't know if I liked it as much as my first reading. And I think I conflated the two Japanese stories in my memory.
Yeah.
And so there's like the one about the blind guy who he was blinded by seeing the hydrogen bomb go off. And then there's that story and he ends up in these woods. And I remembered it being those woods. And I can't remember the name. There's those woods for the spirits of the dead where people in Japan commit suicide. I remember it being in those woods, but I didn't read that this time. And then I really like the otaku, this misfit story. This guy that I remembered him as being some sort of gamer, but he was really just a hacker, just a guy who spent a lot of time online. So he knew this was going on. And then, of course, he stops receiving food at his door and never does hear what happened with his parents. That story, I actually think it would make, and I don't know if it's because of Japan animation and manga and all that, but as he's leaving the apartment, and we later know that he survived because he's in the scene with the other blind, Kondo, I think is his name, the blind guy. He's in that scene, but as he's leaving the apartment, the young guy, as he escapes, tying all those sheets together and finally gets out, he's wearing...
I love that part.
Yeah,
I could just see the sheets. What else would you do? You have to do something and you can't like jump out of the building.
He's 19 floors up. Takes him 3 days to get out. And as he's leaving, he's wearing like a businessman's trench coat in a Hello Kitty backpack or like duffel bag or something. And he's got a samurai sword. And I'm just like, I could just picture that in graphic novel form.
Oh, yeah.
And he's got all this knowledge because he's been reading and doing all this. And so he knows he's safer in the streets than in tight spaces. And I'd love to get his story.
The backstory, the B-roll.
Well, yeah, but just like his escape and what does he do? And he obviously ends up in those woods and he's killing zombies.
I think it was the floor before he found the sword. The author was giving me such wonderful hints that this has to be the floor where he gets his sword. And there it was. I was so satisfied because I was not going to let him go to the streets without some kind of weapon.
And what a transformation he undergoes from this kind of self-centered misfit to somebody who promises to experience and see the world if he can survive. And we know he survives. And
it reminds me of other apocalyptic movies I've seen where the story begins. This guy's story would begin as he's playing a game or something. But you wake up from a gurney and you look around and it looks like a long time. Nobody's around. And he gets out of his room. What's going on? I think something's going on. I better figure it out. So,
right. Yeah. Like the last man was the last man on earth, or the last man, or the beginning of The Walking Dead is like that. That first episode where he wakes up.
That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah.
I think that's based on I think it's called The Last Man. It's a graphic novel.
Oh.
Yeah. I think I might have it. Can add that to the show notes as well. So many good stories, right? They're all in the juggling of
voices. That's what's fun about reading is making the connections. And like this one, the connection was so strong and scary and powerful about the COVID and the things that they were saying. Like our favorite quotes could read as YouTube news stories.
Yeah, no kidding.
You may not pass. Okay. The restrictions for all of the airlines. Really, as an American, where can I go?
Yeah, no kidding. Living abroad and looking at, we're, of course, here in Peru, that's still looking pretty terrible. And as an American, does going back there make sense? how much longer are we staying in a...
Oh, you could go to California. Eddie Jang sent me some pictures. I said, oh my God, is it close? He says, no, but last week we had to evacuate for 4 days.
What do you mean?
It's just like... At the forest fires, the apocalypse over the city.
Yeah, he must be on the last wave to get back to China. That's strange.
Yeah, I don't know.
Those waves of employees they're letting back in. Yeah, they had different waves.
Yeah.
There were quite a few on that last wave. Yeah, the smoke's up there. And my sister's near Portland, and she said it was 300. AQI was like 300 something.
My God.
My parents are north of Seattle, and they said it was like 150 or 170.
Okay, not bad.
No, but yeah.
Terrible.
Normally,
it's not terrible.
Yeah, I think that's one of the lessons from this book is we as humans, we just don't listen to signs unless there's some grabber taking a hold of our ankles. We just don't. Listen, I watched a Vox article recently, and it was talking about what we would need to do to fix the rises in temperature. And it's still not impossible, but like basically 4 more years of the same policies we wouldn't recover from that. And even if that not only a change, like we can't gradually do this anymore. Carbon taxes and things like that, if we'd started in 2000, could have, but that's too late. So the only thing we could do is at this point to one, if 100% of all the replacements for any kind of, any time, some kind of carbon based power producer, as soon as that, because they're all aging, if we replace all of those with new carbon friendly options, then we could do it in time. But that's just not going to happen. There's no way because that's not the cheap option.
Why be so skeptical? Why couldn't it happen?
We could get lucky. The skepticism comes that I don't know that even if there was a different president, it would definitely be better. I just don't know that they could still enact exactly what needs to be done. My point is that it just seems like we're not listening to the warning signs. And so then the cynicism or the skepticism comes with people not being willing to change. I got some takeout of this market, this open market yesterday. We used to go there all the time. It's like an open market. And the crazy thing is that none of the open market restaurant was closed. So none of the outdoor stuff is open. You can only go to an inside place in a mall with no air circulation. And it's all about regulating the number of people in the place. So rather than leave the outdoor ones open, one of our favorite places in the neighborhood, you also have to go inside to eat. We used to sit outside and only allow outside seating. It's totally illogical. And anyway, so I was at this market and they did have some stuff to go. So I wanted to support them or whatever. So I was like, sure, I'll get a few things from this restaurant we used to go to. And it never used to be like this. All the stuff they packed up was in styrofoam boxes. And they weren't styrofoam before.
I want to talk to you about this. They make some amazing disposable, compostable packaging now. Sacks, bags, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it used to be like that at this market. And the grocery stores here have compostable, and they say compostable on the bags. But what I got yesterday was definitely styrofoam.
Yeah.
Which, coming from the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, you don't see that. Of course, I thought a lot of the U.S. was like that, but it's not. Styrofoam still over
the... No more styrofoam. Yeah, I don't... There's a lot of styrofoam here, but there's some... amazingly good things going on here too. Like most stores, you can't get a bag. You have to bring your own. Walmart does not have plastic bags for you. So that's a good thing. But then, you can turn around and somebody will hand you a Coke in a styrofoam cup and you think that with a straw in it.
Yeah. And then you look at the U.S. is heroed somewhat in this book overall. At least we get some.
There's a slant there for sure.
Yeah. And in our world with COVID-19, the countries that had the most success are the ones with the most government control.
Yeah.
Where I am here. But generally speaking,
trusted leaders.
Yeah.
As well, as much as you can trust leaders.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing I was thinking about during this reading too, is I don't trust the CDC anymore.
No, you shouldn't. Yeah. I don't think it's the CDC's fault. I think it's the restrictions that have been put upon them by this administration. And the administration wants to have total control over the information that comes out.
It's hard to go back from that. It takes time to be able to trust again.
And then all of the stuff about the cure for COVID, just like there was a cure for the zombie virus. Don't worry, it's everything's going to be all right. It'll be a miracle. All of that stuff is just too close.
People buying it, whether it works or not. And there's actually a connection there with Trump continuing to call it the China virus. And in the book, they're calling it the African.
Well, you have to demonize it, don't you?
Yeah.
But how China is demonized is weird. Hey, you know what? I would like to talk about our favorite quotes.
Go for it.
You have the first one.
Every rich man's house has a servant's entrance. That's from early on. And I think there's some reasons in which viruses are particularly scary. And one is it has to do with people's choices. And their sort of exceptionalism. Wealthy people can find all these ways, all these different exceptions to get what they want or make what they want happen or get around the rules that are meant for everybody. And then on the flip side of that, you have people who are quite desperate and don't have a lot of options. And so they, again, because they don't have options, don't follow the rules because they're desperate.
Their choices are different.
Yeah. And I think where I am in Lima, in Peru, like that's a big part of why the numbers here just keep going up, because wealthy people still have means to do the things they're not supposed to be doing. And then there's a lot of people who just can't survive without leaving the house or working in places and making tough choices because they need food and water. And so I thought that was profound.
Yes. Yes. We already talked about no, they will not pass, or you won't pass. You will not pass here. That Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Gandalf on the bridge. You will not pass.
Thou shalt not pass. Yeah, I love that.
It was a moment.
I was thinking
and
of that.
And then right after that, money wasn't going to be good for much longer. I looked at my friend and we both agreed that money wasn't going to be good for much longer. Yes. Think about it. What a great equalizer. There was that chapter where the Wall Street guys had to be retrained to wash dishes and how to change your tire. I don't know what. Some basic life skills.
Exactly. Yeah, I was thinking that resonated with me as well. I was wondering what use I would be. Not much. kind of a sad moment. A little bit of a pencil pusher, right? I don't know. I don't have any other particular. Like, I guess I can cook. I could definitely be the cook. I don't know that I could do a lot with. I've gotten into started to do more with herb pots and some just trying to keep some things alive.
Do you have a wonderful spice rack?
No, I wouldn't say I have a great spice rack, but I have quite a few recipes now or different ways to make different kinds of pestos. So we make pestos from. Because we try to do a zero waste kind of thing. As much as I think we've talked about this before, it hasn't been nearly as good, but low waste anyway. And so we try not to throw away things that we can't at least use one more time. So for example, like a lot of the discards from like the ends of carrots or things like this, like we make our own vegetable stock out of that. We always do that. And then, when I went to that market yesterday, there was a bunch of greens, like the carrot tops. So I played with what you could do with that, and you can make pesto out of it. I just kind of sauteed it with some other stuff, and I didn't love it that way, but it was all right. It was kind of like kale. We started making pesto from celery leaves, whereas in the past I'd always kind of thrown those away. And so we either do soup stock or we make pesto from those leaves, and it's quite good. And so we do that, or we're using basil leaves. And so I could offer a little bit of that. I definitely can cook, I guess. When we cook almost every meal at home, I can cook. I could definitely cook for a large group. So there's some use there. But I mean, well, I'm happy to do some physical labor, but I'd have a lot of blisters. What could you offer?
There was still some technology. So I could get into the tech part of it. I'm good with, I have a knack for fixing basic things. If it's a huge deal, I don't think I could replace a toilet, but I can fix the handle that might be broken or the plunger inside, that kind of stuff.
All right.
So,
yeah.
Who was that guy in the parable of the sower who had the perfect house because he was Mr. Fix-It and people would come to him and, hey, can you fix my thing? Remember that guy? That would be me.
Yeah.
I have my tools.
Yeah. I guess we should all be living a little bit more like that.
Then again, if I fix something, and I'm more likely to fix it than to call somebody. If I can't fix it, then I'll call somebody. But sometimes I think I should just call somebody because I don't want to take away a job that somebody could do, because it wouldn't be that much money to me.
That makes sense too.
Okay, I have a job for you. While I'm saying this next quote, I want to find out what your generation's nickname is. But every generation also has a motto. Find out what your motto is. And I don't know what your generation's nickname is either. But Generation Z, they cleaned up their own mess. That was their motto. My generation is the boomers. And our motto is live everything always. I don't know what that means.
Say it again. What is it?
Live Everything Always. It almost sounds like a Dell Webb advertisement as you're going into Sun City West. It's a little creepy, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's right. It sounds terrible.
But hey, they cleaned up their own mess. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't know what I'm Generation X. I'm like the tail end of that because I was born in the late 70s, but I don't know what I don't know what the quote is for Generation X. Yeah, I don't know. I'm a Generation X. This is born between 65 and 81. It says to work and to produce was their philosophy of life.
Gen X?
Workaholic. Yeah. This next quote, yeah, fear is the most valuable commodity in the universe.
Man,
I think that's sadly, arguably true.
Arguably,
yeah. I think there's. I find myself arguing against it. So the word "most" could be problematic, but
what if you changed fear with love is the most valuable commodity in the universe? Then it's a Beatles song. You can just.
I don't think so. Yeah, I think people are driven more by fear than love. It's so sad, but I think so. I think our current state of things is a strong argument for that. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of fear driving the binary, the un-nuanced conversation we're all not having with each other, mostly about fear and not love. And even despite, in fact, I would say despite the love people may have, even within families, sometimes there's fear preventing love. In some ways,
it's always fear the darker force, and the dark and the light are always trying to do each other. And there's when they're out of balance, that really tilts the universe. And
right,
I think in the face of a pandemic, you shouldn't tell the population, if you're a leader, about what's going to happen, because you don't want to strike fear into their hearts. You don't want them to panic. So is that a good thing?
I'm of the opinion that more information is always better, I think. Yeah, more transparency.
Leaders have that decision to make, though, don't they? I could tell them about this, or I could just not.
I think to withhold information means you don't respect the capacity of the people to make a good decision or do the right thing. It really shows you think that you're better than the populace. I don't think there's any other reason for doing that. So if we live in a democracy and we think that we can make decisions on what's best for us, then we should be given all the information. To do otherwise is undemocratic and, I would say, maybe un-American to withhold that info. Because supposedly there's going to be like mass panic. Sure, people would react, and they would have reacted with COVID-19 more strongly, and then it would probably be over, or not over, but it would be in a much better place in the States.
When you look at other countries' reactions and what they did, and now they're better off than the United States, it's a sad thing. It makes me sad.
Yeah.
But don't worry, everything's going to be all right.
Yeah.
A miracle will come.
Yeah, that's it. So the lies. Yeah, the lies. I was thinking there's a lot of, it gets into some issues of fake news, misinformation, alternative facts. Our lies are neither good nor bad. Technology's like that. But I think that's, maybe it's not the same thing. I guess I would argue that technology can clearly be bad. And it's not just a tool like fire that can be good or bad. Facebook and...
Ooh, you said that with such disgust.
Facebook. Yeah, I really don't like Facebook. So there's just such a lack of responsibility, I think, there.
Well, that's not the plan. You are not privy to the plan, and whatever the leaders say should make it better.
Yeah, Zuckerberg said if we just had better AI, that would fix these problems. So... That's his solution.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did I hear the other day? The algorithms were just, what was that quote? I can't remember now. It was like algorithms were like, sort of emotions put into code or feelings put into code or something like that.
Oh, this was going around. I think I've heard this one too. Yeah.
Yeah. Got a list of favorite sci-fi elements. I guess we should talk about that. Not okay. A lot of sci-fi elements.
No, not really. I guess I would add to our list, what was the, I have it here somewhere, the Miracle Cure, Falnex. Yeah, pushing it through the FDA, and we already talked about that, kind of a weird thing, but that's a science fiction kind of element. Could be, what was that awful drug that Trump was touting, hydroxychloroquine? Yeah, hydroxychloroquine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I got that quote. Algorithms, of course, I don't remember who said it. Algorithms are just opinions embedded in code.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I think that resonated with me. That sounds true. Years ago,
algorithms in computing snuck up on me. I haven't worked with algorithms. I'd like to actually see one and see what it looks
like. Well, I was really of the opinion like 10 years ago that technology was neutral and that it depended on how you used it. It was just like a tool, and you could, I don't know, like you could kill somebody with a knife, or you could cut up vegetables and feed them with a knife, that kind of thing. And I mm-hmm. have an extreme example now that I'm saying out loud, but
it's a gun. It's an NRA thing.
Yeah. A gun or something. And so a gun's going to protect or kill. It doesn't have any other, I don't know, I guess a knife or like a fire or something is a good example as a tool. And so I always thought that. And the more I understand about apps and apps especially, right, all the things about your smartphone that really are designed to exploit human vulnerabilities to certain biases and certain temptations, or their ways in which we're persuaded.
And how did we get here? How did this happen to us? We let this happen to us?
We know it's happening.
Because we love our gadgets so much, we'll let that go.
Yeah, I just watched The Social Dilemma. It just came out on Netflix. Yeah, it's worth checking out, but it's basically about that. And all these guys that kind of designed the apps are interviewed. And they say that even though they designed it, they know exactly how they're being manipulated and persuaded, they still find themselves being manipulated and persuaded. It's so powerful.
Okay. Favorite sci-fi elements for World War Z? One of mine was, of course, it has to be World War Z, kill zombies with your SIR, standard infantry rifle, with a kind of a special bayonet attachment to this. You could change this rifle in so many ways. You could make it a long shot or a machine gun shot. It is similar, very similar to the description of a gun that I saw on YouTube in one of those shows that, hey, we're going to tell you all about the weapons of the world. And on this show, they were talking about this weapon called the SAW that now our military uses. And it can be used as a virtual chain gun, or you could pull off the barrel and put another one in for the sniper part of it. And so it had many different and powerful options. And that's how I imagine this weapon is, you know, as long as you could keep it loaded. Yeah. And I like your Lobo. Talk about video games. Yeah. Double headed axe.
Yeah. There is a video game for World War Z. I just noticed actually. I've never played it, but yeah, I wonder if it follows this story or how well it does.
Yeah. An excuse. That sounds like an excuse to try.
Yeah, I don't even know if I know how to try at this point. Maybe I'll check it out.
Are you a scuba diver?
I've done that 5 times in my life. I loved it. Yeah, I think it's one of the more amazing. I did that off the coast of Thailand. I think that's one of the more amazing experiences I've ever had. Yeah.
So you would want a Zivadec Zero Visibility Detection Kit, which was one of the most horrifying parts of this book. When you go underwater, the guy was describing, oh, we're going in the submarine, we're going down. And then he starts telling the story, and I realize what they're going to find when they go down there. And it's, yeah, of course, why wouldn't they be underwater and all of that? But that's just another freak out. And then the reason that they needed the Zivadec is to at least see out of the murkiness, you know, where these creatures were going to attack you. It's, oh my God. And then the description was worthy in that section.
Yeah, I like that as well. It had me thinking of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. A little bit. And and I also the idea of Moby Dick, which I've never read, although I watched an awesome TED Ed video on that, which made me really want to read it. I really need to
really?
Read it. Yeah, I've got to. You got to check that
out. What's one thing in the TED X thing that...
Yeah, one of the things that got me really excited was that, I guess, within that book, and I just knew it was about a guy chasing a whale. And it starts with a line, "Call me Ishmael." That's yeah. All new. And basically, what I didn't know that got me excited was that there's all these different genres within that book. So I think there's like some letters, and one whole chapter is basically like a play.
Huh.
And I just thought that was super interesting. And it's come up enough with so many people that I respect that are just like, it's just one of the best books I've ever read. And I just have never tackled it. I know it's a long read and not an easy one. And I don't know. I just have never done that. So put that TED Ed thing. We got to put that in the show notes, but it's really cool. It's one of those animated videos. It's really
okay.
Yeah. You'd want to read it after watching that as well, I think.
Okay. And the last one that I have on the devices, the element are the cherry pies. The bullets that they developed to explode the brain of a zombie so they couldn't reanimate. Good thing. But if you didn't get the composition of the chemical composition just right, it would melt on the inside or start a fire, and then you get the glowing red eyes. Zombies weren't scary enough. Now they're running around with red eyes. And it means you're in a battle because you're shooting and that's going on. That'd be pretty scary.
Yeah, I thought that was great imagery. Yeah, that was, creepy. Yeah, great, such inventive writing and I guess inventive ideas and really enjoyed it. I got to read, I've never read anything else by Max Brooks, and he's got it was a kid's book, and I don't know, I think there was years where I just associated these zombie stories with kids for whatever reason. The Zombie Guide.
Survival
Guide, which was worth checking out. And then Colton Whitehead, his first kind of mainstream success, I think, was a book about zombies.
Really?
Yeah.
Do I know that? I sort of remember that, yeah.
Zone One, that was the name of it. Any last thoughts on World War Z? I guess we didn't really get into genres.
Yeah, we probably should say, I was thinking about that today. Is it really science fiction? I'd go along with science fiction. I don't know. I think this is a lot very horrific. Or sci-fi. There's a horror sci-fi. What is sci-fi about it?
It's fiction.
Is it fantasy? I don't know.
There's some sort of...
That doesn't feel right.
We don't really ever find out the exact cause, but there's a virus. I think anytime you're dealing with a virus, it's sci-fi. It's apocalypse.
Oh, okay. The apocalypse. That's a genre too, even.
Yeah.
Are we going to have to erase this episode?
Mutants kind of fall into it. No, I think it's also on that list that we've been working through with a lot of sci-fi. So I think it's classified as sci-fi as much as I would argue this.
Okay, I'll go along with that.
Yeah. Science fantasy. But I think you're right. There's definitely like some horror and some fantasy. There have been cases of people like the what are they called in this the
Quislings or
I wrote that down somewhere. What was it
the Quislings?
There's people like eating flesh of others. There's been some cases where that's happened, where people had some kind of something wrong with them where they were like eating flesh. And I think it's conceivable that it's not such a stretch to think that something might happen to where people might do that, lose their humanity to that degree.
I don't think it would take much.
Well, and I think as we start to biohack that, which is really going to start happening fast, you could certainly see how people might lose their humanity in a way where they've lost their own, where they become, I don't know, I guess just animal-like base instinct. You could see that happening, right? I don't know. I think it would.
I could see that happening, yeah. And that's why you have to carry certain things in your go bag to take care of those kind of characters.
Double-edged axe, boots.
Yeah. Most of them, unless they're too crazy, would probably be fearful, cowardly.
Yeah, I thought that was wild. Yeah, the Quislings. Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Quislings. Oh yeah, and then Feral. You know you're in a battle and you're shooting this. How did it go? You shoot the Quisling, but yeah, and then it would die. But there was some kind of a turnaround there that made them so dangerous.
Oh, that was something that wasn't clear to me with this book, was how they exactly turned. Because at times they seem to be eaten.
Yeah.
Just totally devoured. And other times,
and I think that's part of their thing. But I think I remember a description of the Quislings where they lost all hope, all humanity, and so they were just joining the herd and casting their fates to whatever happened next. And the real sad thing was that it was those people that they couldn't rehabilitate. They could rehabilitate the kids who grew up as ferals. They could rehabilitate some of those, but not the Quislings. They didn't want to live.
What's that sci-fi?